Hi, I'm Emily Running, founder and director of DanceWire, and it is June 9th. I'm here in Portland, Oregon, talking with Ann Mueller, one of DanceWire's ambassadors. And this is part of an ongoing series of interviews with members of the Portland dance community. So welcome, Ann.
Hi.
Hi. So we're gonna have just a little conversation here, but I have a few questions for you. Just to get started, I want to ask who you are working with currently, and then perhaps just a brief overview of who you've worked with over the course of your career. So I know that that could be a very lengthy
conversation. Yes.
A long conversation, but let's start with...
I'll do my best to keep it brief.
Sure, yeah, we'll keep it brief.
Yeah. So currently I work for the Portland Ballet. I am co-artistic director there, and specifically I lead our Career Track program, which is a pre-professional training program. I've been there full-time for 2 years and was part-time, I think, 2 years prior to that.
Cool.
In terms of my career history prior to that, I started my professional career right out of high school, dancing for Alabama Ballet. I danced with them for 3 seasons, and then I was hired by Oregon Ballet Theater, and I joined that company in 1996 when it was under the direction of James Cantfield. Mm-hmm. Danced for him for 7 or 8 years, and then the organization transitioned to a new artistic director, Christopher Stowell, mm-hmm. and I danced for him for 7 or 8 years. It's a little bit hard to remember all of the years. During my time dancing for Christopher, I also... was co-founder, managing director, and company artist with Trey McIntyre Project, mm-hmm. which was a summer company at that time, so I was able to work here in Portland during the main part of the season and then do summer tours. After I retired, actually prior to my retirement as a dancer, I began working on the staff at Oregon Ballet Theater, both as a teacher in the school and then doing ballet mastering and then pursuing touring opportunities and managing touring opportunities. So when I retired from performing, I transitioned into a full-time position on the artistic staff at OBT and became shortly thereafter director of artistic operations. And then I did a stint as interim artistic director before leaving Oregon Ballet Theater in 2013. So I had, I think, 18 years with the organization.
Wow.
In total.
Yeah.
Maybe that's wrong. Something like that. It was a long time. maybe it was 17. And then I thought I could use a little bit of a break from dance after that. So I was managing director of Bag and Baggage, a theater company based in Hillsboro. Worked there for 2 years, learned about the theater scene. That was a wonderful and educational experience for me. And then sort of felt the pull to return to dance, and that's when I expanded my level of involvement at the Portland Ballet.
Yeah, and I just want to pick up on something you said there, is that when you retired as a dancer, but do you ever really retire as a dancer?
That's a great question, and one that I think I'm still sort of figuring out. I guess by retiring, I mean,
from the ballet stage.
My performing career was
sure.
pretty much capped off at that point. I don't see myself returning to performing, and the level of physical maintenance that I was, having to do
to
dance at that level. I'm certainly not doing that anymore. So my level
yeah.
of conditioning is, not at a professional level anymore.
Yeah. All right. Well, so how would you describe the current Portland dance scene? Talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I thought because I've been in Portland since 1996, I thought it might be interesting for me to sort of talk about what it was like then. And kind
Tell
of how it's changed.
History.
Yeah, so when I moved here to Portland to dance for Oregon Ballet Theater, I believe Body Vox had just started or started shortly after my arrival, and White Bird had not yet started.
Totally.
There was no Northwest Dance Project. The Portland Ballet wasn't in existence yet, so it was a much smaller dance community.
Right. We have a very young, relatively speaking, dance community in terms of no establishment.
Right,
really formed yet.
Right. Yeah. Although, I think the African dance community was much more established kind of early on in Portland than more, you know, classically based dance forms. So, which is something I've learned more about recently.
Sure.
Yeah. So, just watching all of this artistic activity sort of grow, it feels like exponential growth year upon year, you know, and it's hard to even imagine that we were, the distance that we've traveled in the 20 years that I've been here. And now there's so much going on, like I can't even keep up with all of it. it's really impressive, and it feels very exciting that so many people living in this community are able to dedicate at least, you know, part of their professional lives to to dancing.
Yeah, how is your kind of interaction with different parts? Because you brought up African dance, which you didn't have, you knew was here in force. But maybe you didn't have as much interaction with it. Like, how can you describe your interaction with the various pockets dance of the dance forms. Community?
Yeah, I would say, you know, going back to, you know, my earlier years here, I was a curious dancer and was always sort of looking for what else was going on in town. So I would go to Conduit and, you know, I would take master classes. You know, I worked with Mary Oslin's company a little bit. I taught them some ballet classes and was around them. And, you know, when Whitebird brought choreographers in for master classes, I would take classes with, you know, various choreographers to try and, you know, expand my toolbox, as it were. I took hip-hop classes.
Which is always hilarious for ballerinas.
Yeah, but, you know, it really, it paid off for me a lot. You know, our repertoire was pretty contemporary when I joined the company, and I'd come from a company that was primarily classical, so I needed to supplement my
movement my non-classical.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. And it really opened up a lot of opportunities for me in doing that. And then I would say, so my own curiosity and, you know, broadening my toolbox as a dancer was part of what exposed me to what else was going on, but also as a teacher, I started teaching in the summertime for Kristen Brayson, who was at Da Vinci at the time, and she would run a summer program, so I would work for her. And, you know, there was always African class happening, jazz class happening. You know, she was the tap and jazz instructor, so I was getting to know some teachers of other disciplines, and I would say that's the other way that I started to become aware. I also did one summer at Young Musicians and Artists in Salem. And also there, you know, got in touch with other dance teachers in town and, you know, started to become aware of what other people were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's an, I think that that's a really important part, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, or a very important part of our work as dancers is to continue broadening, continue having that curiosity, continue to explore different movement styles and just broaden what you know, what you bring.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, the fences between the different styles have come down in my...
What do you mean?
I mean, you know, ballet companies used to be just much more ballet-based, and, and now as a ballet dancer, you just have to be so... You have to be
more
able
versatile.
To do so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I think that's true across genres.
I agree,
versatility is... the most, you know, one of the most important features when you're auditioning, when you're looking into something. So, yeah, cool. So what were some of the challenges that you faced in your pursuit to a career in dance?
You know, I was a super determined young person. Once I was like, this is what I want to do. I think I set my sights on it at probably age 10 or 11. And I just really did not look back or question that goal at all. You know, I think my parents had some fear and hesitation around high school graduation. Like, is this going to work? But I just plowed forward. I was super determined. That being said, you know, it's not easy being a professional ballet dancer. You have to ride a lot of ups and downs. You know, sometimes your casting is great and you're feeling wonderful and that sort of feeds itself. But other times when your casting's not great, you know, you start questioning yourself, like, how much longer can I do this? Am I, you know, am I in the right place? And yeah, so I think it's challenging to ride the ups and downs mm-hmm. of the career and sort of, you know, stay the course and stay confident and solid in what you have to offer and bring. So, like, from a psychological, emotional standpoint, I would say that's, you know, certainly a challenge mm-hmm. for, I think, almost any professional dancer. And then, you know, financial stuff is not easy.
Right.
Both in terms of personal finances, you know, it's not a super lucrative field, so you have to structure your lifestyle in a way that you can survive. Mm-hmm. That part has been less difficult for me, actually, than the financial struggles of the organizations that I've worked for.
Hmm.
I have personally sort of felt and taken on a lot of the stress of the organizations that I've worked for, you know, when they were in times of financial need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would say that's kind of a big overarching thing throughout my professional career. I've always been really aware and sensitive to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had any tools along the way that really help you keep those in balance or help you through those challenges?
I think I'm a doer, you know, so my way of coping with sort of any situation of stress or anxiety or need is to just...
Action,
yeah. Like, what can I do in this situation to try and make it better?
Sure, which probably is why you took on organizational, you know...
Yeah, absolutely.
...struggles as your own and whatnot, but yeah.
Yep.
I think, do you think that is a trait that you got... from dance, or is that just a personal trait?
I think it's a family/personal trait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, I think kind of follow-up question to that is what resources, people, or opportunities really helped you, like, stand out to you as just, wow, I wouldn't have been where I am today without this.
I thought about this question actually before our interview, and you know, the list is pretty tremendous of all mm-hmm. the people who have been helpful to me throughout my career, but I feel like I need to really acknowledge those teachers that I had right at the very beginning
mm-hmm.
because had they not had the, courage or wherewithal to, you know, talk to my parents and say, your child has an aptitude towards this, and mm-hmm. if you want to nurture her, here's what you should do.
Yeah, nice.
If they hadn't done that, you know, none of this would have happened because my parents would have had no idea, and I would have continued with like 30 minutes of ballet and 30 minutes of tap once a week, you know?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really grateful. Cynthia Anderson was one, and Judy Rhodes.
Yeah.
Judy Rhodes Calgaro, I think, was her married name. Early teachers that just recognized that I had talent and...
Yeah, I just want to pick up on that for a minute because that's such an interesting point, is that dancers often start their career at an age where they're really living their family's life,
right?
And so they're not in an age where people usually kind of get to understand a little bit more about themselves and what they want to do with their lives, and they can often pick something up and it not go in quite the direction they were intending and then switch course and pick something else up. But that's maybe all in high school and college setting, and maybe they change their major and come around to it. But as a, 11-year-old?
Yeah, about 10. And I felt actually a little bit late getting into, you know, serious, rigorous classical ballet training. I had a lot of catch up to do. And I'm also grateful that the teachers that reached out to my parents, sort of put it to them, mm-hmm. like, this is a huge family sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you should be aware that if you go down this road, you're going to be dedicating a lot of, you know, resources and not just financial resources, but just a lot of sacrifices mm-hmm. in general. So that they kind of had a heads up about that going in, because it was a tremendous sacrifice for my family, not just my parents, my siblings also.
In what way?
My brother, his senior year of high school, picked me up at school every day and drove me to my dance classes.
Yeah, yeah.
every day.
Yeah.
So.
Again, it's just, it's so fascinating because just this idea of starting a professional career at age 11.
Right.
You know, and really having that, the mass commitment that it is to be there. So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Any other, people resource opportunities that you want to, I kind of sidetracked us. I wasn't sure if you finished.
Well, I guess I just wanted to like give them a shout out.
Right, right. Totally.
But also, when it was time for me to leave Alabama Ballet, this was like pre-internet. You know, okay, I mean, right, the internet right. was around. I don't want to make myself sound like a dinosaur, but it didn't have the presence in our everyday lives that it does now. So having any clue of like how to get a job, mm-hmm. There was just nowhere to get that information or even to find out like where are all the companies and what are they like. So there were some older dancers there specifically and then later throughout my career that mentored me and had a huge impact on the direction mm-hmm. that my career took.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
big thanks to them too.
Awesome. Awesome. So, big, huge question. What does dance mean to you or has meant to you in your life? Like what? Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's been changing a lot over the last 5 or 6 years mm-hmm. since I retired from my performing career.
Sure.
You know, when I was training and performing, it was just my reason for being.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I had kind of like a fireball inside of me, mm-hmm. and I felt like I absolutely had to do it, and this was the outlet for it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've got something to give, and this is the place where I do it.
Right.
And luckily, I think I used up the fireball.
No,
that's not the right way to put it. No, but it's I feel like I satisfied that.
Sure.
Which I feel really immensely grateful that I had the opportunity to like get to a place of, you know, satisfaction and completion in my career. So I think since retiring, it's become, you know, now I'm a dance educator. So it's more about, you know, how can I, of course, pass on all of the knowledge that I've gained over the years to young people and help set them up for success. But I've been thinking on sort of a more philosophical level, like what is classical dance training offer people in terms of opportunities for self-improvement? Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody is going to be a professional ballet dancer. And even if they are, they're going to be something else afterwards. So, you know, what is it about this art form that I can sort of emphasize and pass on to help these kids be the best version of themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where my focus is now.
Yeah, cool. So what is some advice that, nuggets of advice that you have for dancers? I suppose let's focus on kind of the age that you're working with, that 13 to 19, I guess. There's quite a range there, that age dancer.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's the very methodical, technical aspects of the art form, which require a tremendous amount of time to sort of work on and attempt to master. So that's a lot of, you know, a lot of our focused work together. But on a sort of more philosophical level, at least those that are sort of ready to embrace it, I think that classical ballet offers you, you know, this ideal that you're working towards. Mm-hmm. And you, if you're going to be successful with that, there's going to have to be a sort of reconciliation mm-hmm. of who am I and what is my body and what does my body do mm-hmm. and how does that fit into this aesthetic? Mm-hmm. Because very few people fit in perfectly. So it takes a sort of like honesty and humility to sort of evaluate oneself and see mm-hmm. these are all the, you know, positive attributes I bring. Mm-hmm. These other things, I'm going to struggle against these things, but I'm going to struggle against these things with honesty and courage mm-hmm. and acknowledge that in some ways, those are the parts of me that make me most interesting as an artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I see that as well. You know, people can have flawless technique, but if they don't have that fireball driving them, then, and if there isn't something personal and passionate and authentic about their movement, yeah. it shows.
Yeah.
It shows as cookie cutter, or for it shows sure. as just,
yeah.
it's bland.
Yeah.
It's bland, even if the technique is flawless and all of the, you know, all of the same amount of time and training and everything goes into it. If there isn't that kind of uniqueness about it, then...
And willingness to lay yourself bare and really be vulnerable. And for me as a performing artist, that was the thing that was most exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, the roles that gave me an ability to just try to fearlessly expose, you know, who I am.
Yeah. Any of those roles come to mind, or any kind of, like, experiences come to mind?
Sure,
that you
yeah.
can tell a story about?
I mean, I'm sort of an assertive, like, personality type, so I think I felt most comfortable in roles that kind of match that, which are not super plentiful in the classical ballet or so.
Sure.
So, you know, a lot of neoclassical and contemporary work sort of mm-hmm. Suited me a little bit better. But a work like Jerome Robbins' The Cage,
mm-hmm.
I didn't get to perform that a bunch of times, but it was, you know, a role that I felt really suited my desire to be able to... you know, show who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christopher Stoll created a Rite of Spring
mm-hmm.
that I actually was choreographic assistant on. Mm-hmm. And that one had also gave me an opportunity to really just, you know, put it all out there.
Yeah.
In a really assertive and almost ferocious kind of way. And I
sure.
found that really satisfying.
So how did you work with or approach the more, I guess, opposite to that.
Right.
I won't use a word.
Yeah.
But opposite to that role. It's like, how did you embrace a role that was kind of the antithesis of what you felt
right.
was your biggest strength? How did you approach those roles?
Well, I think, I mean, you know, those types of roles, the sort of softer, more mm-hmm. more classically based roles, you know, that's what I fell in love with as a young dancer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's a part of me as well. And then I think in those cases, I would sort of try to channel my, you know, I keep using the word ferocious, which is really kind of a scary word, but assertiveness into technical aspects,
mm-hmm.
you know, like really trying to fearlessly attack, like, big jumps and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So using it as a dynamic more
okay.
than an artistic
sure.
tone or
yeah.
mood.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cool. This is kind of begging the question I have to ask of, you know, traditional gender roles. You know, I went to the ballet recently and was just struck by I went to the Pearl and Ballet's show, and some of the older pieces of work, it was so obvious, you know, just the delicate feminine
very
and then
feminine.
The very masculine,
yeah.
like, man, and, you know, such distinct gender roles, and I noticed just such a stark difference between the older work and then the more contemporary work, and I don't know, do you have... Talk about that a little bit. Like, how are those roles changing in the classical world at all, or are people experiencing them in a different way, or do you feel that that is just strongly rooted in a classical, you know, just what it is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think the works are reflective of the time in which they were created,
yeah.
and I always thought of doing older classical works, like stepping into a work of visual art.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You become
yeah.
of that time and place when
totally.
You are in that work.
It's funny that you say that, because when I was watching the ballet just a couple of weeks ago, I kept trying to put myself in the place of, who would I be if I was an audience member going to this show? Tell me what year this show... one of the pieces that from your recent show was
Les Sylphides, like, is probably what you're thinking
yeah.
of, and that was, it's debatable, like, which version we're talking about,
sure,
but
sure.
Late 1890s, early 1900s.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to put myself in, who would I be if I was an audience member going to that? What would I be wearing? Like,
right,
I really
right.
had,
yeah,
I,
yeah.
I really, for some reason, just naturally got caught up in this whole, like, who would I be, what would I be wearing, how would I feel, you know, my husband sitting next to me, how would our relationship be, like,
right.
I had this
yeah.
whole
yeah.
thing going on that I was just so fascinated by, with that, because it is such a long history of the art form.
Well, and that work, I mean, it looks so super old-fashioned and classical now, but it was actually quite cutting edge at the time because it was plotless. So the whole notion of a plotless work of dance was kind of revolutionary.
That is so funny.
Yeah, I
know. And awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, interesting. Well, we're going to wrap up a little bit, but what do you see for the future of dance in Portland?
That's a good question.
What do you want to see?
What do I want to see? Well, of course I want just greater support, you know, greater financial support, sort of going back to what we were talking about earlier. I think we've got a nice variety of dance organizations in town. Mm-hmm. I hope that we're all able to sort of continue to thrive. Mm-hmm. I think we're getting some good, and DanceWire is a big part of that, sort of communication and connection between the different parts of the dance community. Mm-hmm. I would love for, and this isn't just Portland, this is, you know, more broadly speaking, I would love for our culture to acknowledge and embrace the value that arts bring to the vitality of a city. Mm-hmm. We've definitely seen tremendous growth in our population and the vibrance of our economy here in Portland, and I think that the performing arts are a huge part of making that a reality, and I'm not sure how we convince people about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is evidence, but it feels like we're constantly sort of working to demonstrate our worth. Mm-hmm. So that's my big wish, that we're able to sort of initiate a cultural change where more broadly, people recognize the value that the arts bring.
Yeah, me too. And we'll do what we can to get there.
Definitely.
So, awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. We did pretty good. 27-20. That's not bad.